You can wander the golden shores for miles. You can climb the highest mountains, touch the skies, or gaze on the far horizon, red outback. Open your eyes to Australia.
Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the series Open Your Eyes to Australia. My name is Jim Lowe, and I'm speaking to you from the Blue Mountains in New South Wales, Australia. One Saturday night in 1972, I was invited to tea at my parents' place in North Sydney. A good friend of my father, Thomas McCarthy, was also there. After tea, I recorded Mr. McCarthy recite from memory some poems he had learnt in the Angledool area back in the 1920s. The township of Angledool is in northern New South Wales. This area was first settled by Europeans in the late 1840s after Sir Thomas Mitchell's exploration in 1846. The town is about 30 kilometres from the Queensland border. One of the poems recited by Mr. McCarthy was about an Aboriginal leader called King Tommy. He later gave me a typewritten copy that he had made of the poem entitled The King. Mr. McCarthy was 82 years of age when I recorded him. Unfortunately, he didn't know who wrote the poems. Born in Victoria and educated in Sydney, Thomas McCarthy and his twin brother went to help manage a family property in the Angledool district after their father's death in 1924. The McCarthy brothers were later to leave the area because of drought and return to Sydney. Up until 1996, I had never heard the name Jim Harper. However, through a brief mention of the books Splashes from the Narran and Memories of Angledool on the radio that year, I was able to make contact with Mrs. Pat Cross of Mehigh, Angledool. Over the telephone, I recited sections of some of the poems, including The King, which I had heard Mr. McCarthy say nearly 25 years before. What a thrill it was to hear her response. They're Jim Harper poems. Jim Harper was born in Coonabarabran in May 1878. As a child, he moved with his family to the township of Angledool. Most of Jim Harper's life was lived in the Angledool area. During his life, he gained a reputation in the district as a poet and writer. Although he published two collections of his work in the 1920s, unfortunately, a lot of his writing was never published. In the 1940s, he wrote a series of weekly articles for the Coleraine Gazette. He based these articles on his reminiscences of his life in Angledool. Thomas McCarthy died at North Sydney in February 1978. He was a wonderful old man, a true gentleman whom it was my good fortune to have met. I can still picture him as he, with little apparent effort, recollected words heard first by him nearly 50 years before, as a young man in the drought-ravaged northwest of New South Wales. I'm still of the opinion that he learnt the poems orally. Although Harper's poetry was first published around the same time that the McCarthy twins left for the northwest, I don't believe that they ever owned or saw a copy of Splashes from the Narran, in which the poems recited to me back in 1972 are contained. Both brothers were very sentimental, keeping many mementos of their past, for example, the hats they wore at Sydney's Barker College. I believe that Mr. McCarthy was more likely to have heard the poems recited by others during his time in the Angledool district and made copies of them so he could learn them himself. I doubt that he ever met Jim Harper. If he had known the author, I feel sure that he would have acknowledged the fact, and his memory was too good to have forgotten. A close study of some of the variations between Harper's poems and Tom McCarthy's versions shows only slight variations. I believe that this most likely happened in their oral transmission amongst those who heard the poems and like them enough to learn them as accurately as possible. The song The Narran Side is an adaptation of Harper's poem The King. Under the poem's title is written in brackets, "Written in 1907. Jim Harper knew King Tommy. Harper recalled the Aboriginal sharing with him his memories of the floods in the district before the 1890 flood. He also took him to places which the floodwaters had covered.
When white man made the Narran Side his permanent address, when these boundary-ridden paddocks were a howling wilderness, when the old bark was hidden in the midst of the coming years, the blacks they roamed the ridges with their boomerangs and spears. And there was one among them who of worldly cares had none, only a little pickaninny, an Aboriginal mother's son. At times perhaps she dreamed of a future when a boy, a man should see, but her dreams gave her no vision of what his sad end would be. For the white man crossed the Narran, and he straightway claimed their land. There was blood shed on the Narran ere they got the upper hand, but the struggle soon was over, and the blacks forced to submit. They were turned straight into beggars, so they made the best of it. And years rolled by, and as they did, the wild tribes drooped and died. Of old age, foul play, starvation, they were not to be denied, till just a few were left to crawl along their idle way. And amongst them now a greyhead, Tommy of the wild old days. And so today we see him, poor old God-forsaken wreck, proud of the brass that dangles from a chain around his neck, with an air of one who's proud of so much matted hair and dirt. He wanders round the township in a policeman's cast-off shirt. But the white man crossed the Narran, and he straightway claimed their land. There was blood shed on the Narran ere they got the upper hand. But the struggle soon was over, and the blacks forced to submit. They were turned straight into beggars, so they made the best of it. But I'm sure that very often, when the night is still and black, and he's dozing near his campfire, that his memory takes him back and conjures up a picture that can drive away his pain, of the old wild life that bred him and is happy once again. His limbs are very feeble now, his eyes are very dim, and of worldly cares and sorrow, well, few remain for him. Just a little more of suffering, and then the camp will sing a sad and mournful melody, the death wail for a king. Oh, but the white man crossed the Narran, and he straightway claimed their land. There was blood shed on the Narran ere they got the upper hand. But the struggle soon was over, and the blacks forced to submit. They were turned straight into beggars, so they made the best of it. When white man made the Narran Side his permanent address,
when these boundary-ridden paddocks were a howling wilderness, when the old bark was hidden in the midst of the coming years. The blacks, they roamed the ridges with their boomerangs and spears. The blacks, they roamed the ridges with their boomerangs and spears. When I first listened to Mr. McCarthy reciting this poem, the image of Tommy wandering about the township in a policeman's cast-off shirt was hard to forget. The description of this Aboriginal elder wearing the discarded clothes of the representatives of the laws of another culture made a real impact on me. Mention should be made here of the practice of distributing brass breastplates to certain Aboriginals. It was started by Governor Macquarie in 1815. Governors and other officials, as well as free settlers, continued the practice through to the 1930s. The plates recognised kings, queens, and other titles unrelated to Aboriginal traditions and culture. Some plates were given for exceptional service. Others, sadly, were issued to persons considered by the Europeans to be the final members of their tribal groups. In this poem, Harper suggests that Tommy was given his plate and title of King of the Narran tribe because he was the last of that wild tribe. Listen to my 1972 recording of Thomas McCarthy reciting the verse from which this description comes.
Once an independent savage, now a civilized disgrace, the last of that wild tribe that gave the white invaders place. So to honor the occasion, when a plate there was to swing, old Tommy he was sent for, and duly plated king.
There is also the possible, facetious inference on Harper's part that another reason for giving Tommy a breastplate was because he allowed his tribal land to be taken from him. However, despite the fact that the breastplate signifies the suppression of his authority by another, in Harper's mind, Tommy is proud of the brass that dangles from a chain about his neck. When he made what he refers to as his first acquaintance with Aboriginals at Angledool, Harper claimed to have no hesitation in stating that they outnumbered the white population by a large majority. He wrote the following in one of his Collarinnabri Gazette articles. There was a big camp on the ridge facing the township, and the small white children, of which I was one, were always welcome visitors. Those people, young and old, always appeared to take a motherly interest in us, and our own mothers never worried about our safety so long as they knew we were at the camp. Harper had been raised having a respect and concern for the Narran Aboriginals. He witnessed the decline in their numbers and the slow destruction of what he calls the old traditions, the pride, the strict moral code handed down to them by the old warriors. Harper's poem provides us with a rare glimpse of life on the frontier before colonial life brutalised many of the settlers in their attitude and behaviour towards the Aboriginals. In The King, Tommy's memories return him to the old wild bush that bred him, where he finds some solace. In another of his Collarinnabri Gazette articles, Harper wrote, "The sight of an Aboriginal man always takes me back to the old days, and I see Tommy, who, in his declining years, was plated king of the Narran tribe, and his old wife, Maria." Harper wrote from his experience of the frontier in Angledool and what he saw happen to the Narran Aboriginals. "I have always thought that the first verse of this poem is such a powerful one. It concisely highlights the differences between the two cultures existing on the frontier. European ideas towards the land, characterised by ownership, permanent housing, land clearing and fencing, are contrasted with those of the Narran Aboriginals who roamed the ridges of this howling wilderness." Listen again to my 1972 recording of Thomas McCarthy reciting this verse.
"When white man made the Narran side his permanent address, when these boundary-ridden paddocks were a howling wilderness, when the old bark was hidden in the mist of coming years, the blacks, they roamed the ridges with their boomerangs and spears.
Harper is saying that the lives of these Aboriginals would never be the same again. In one verse of the poem, he has Tommy remembering the arrival of the newcomers as that awful first white man seen, which returns him, in Harper's words, to his sad life and his pain. It was in Angledool as a child that Jim Harper also met an Aboriginal woman named Polly Flood. It was she who taught him to swim in the Narran River. Polly was also a proficient concertina player. When Jim Matthews was licensee of the Commercial Hotel in the 1880s, he and his wife encouraged dancers there. They turned the hotel's largest room into a ballroom and had Polly play for the dancers. The dancers were very well attended and would often last until sunrise. "And couldn't Polly Flood play that concertina?" commented Harper years later in one of his weekly Coleraine Rye Gazette articles. In this article, Jim Harper imagined himself as the first piano in Angledool. For a few years, the piano was housed in the Yarranbah station before being installed in the Commercial Hotel. "The dining room of the old bark pub was the scene of many a glorious night," wrote Harper in the imagined voice of the piano. The piano continues, "Lit with candles and slush lamps, it showed off the latest styles in ball dresses. They never offered any excuses for the music. It was absolutely the best procurable and was supplied by a half-caste woman, Polly Flood, on concertina." Polly Flood, goodness gracious, she was a woman with a family in the 80s, and yet today, with the aid of a stick, she may be seen tottering up Fox Street, Walgett. Oh, Polly, Polly, if your thoughts ever carry you back to those dim and distant 80s at Angledool, do not hold it against me that I was instrumental in pushing you and your concertina into the limbo of forgotten things. I was just a step in the march of progress on the Narran. A picture of Polly Flood in later life can be found in the State Library of New South Wales at Work and Play series. The caption for the picture reads, "Polly was a well-known Aborigine, Walgett, New South Wales." The township of Walgett is 100 kilometres south of Angledool. This undated black-and-white photograph shows an elderly woman with her hat slanted on her white-grey hair, looking directly at the camera. She is sitting erect on what could be a veranda step, and beside her is a dog. Harper also wrote a poem about Polly Flood when she was 96 years old and living in Walgett. In the poem, he refers to her as a fun-free friend. It appears that Polly often acted as a midwife when she lived at Angledool. "White babies were born out there, with you the first to hear their cries and give them tender love," he writes. He also confesses what he calls the tender spot he has for her, and his inability, and I am quoting again from his poem here, "to make your burden less as silently you face the shades in all your loneliness." As I have said before, Jim Harper had been raised to have a respect and concern for the Narran Aboriginals. He witnessed their declining population and the slow destruction of their way of life. Regretfully, he knew only too well how the spread of European settlement, with its farming and later opal mining practices, its diseases and social vices, impacted severely on the lives of individuals like Polly Flood. The poem Harper wrote about Polly Flood is intensely personal. It expresses his regret and guilt for what happened to this once valued member of the Angledool community. Because of this, I thought it only right to leave it as a poem. However, I wanted to tell Polly Flood's story in song as well, and composed one about her based on Harper's writings. My song highlights her time in Angledool and her unique contribution to that frontier settlement towards the end of the 19th century. I introduce my song by reciting the last verse of Harper's poem about Polly Flood. With all my heart, Polly Flood, your old brown hand in mine, I wish you peace for what is left of life for Auld Lang Syne. The tender spot I have for you will last until the end, for I remember, Polly Flood, you were a fun, free friend.
Polly was known round the district as a fun-loving friend to all. If a mother's child needed minding, she'd always answer the call. And many a parent remembers how she taught their children to swim. Down in the Narran River, though the years their memories dim, the old bark pub by the river at the bottom of the hill. The girls come dressed up for dancing, the fellas to drink their fill. In the dining room where they gather, it's here the fun all begins. As the dancers are raising the floor dust, Polly's concertina sings. To the sound of a concertina, they dance the night away. And by the light of the candle and slush lamp, oh, couldn't that Polly Flood play? She lived to be almost 100, though the years were not always kind. She was thankful for those happy memories, thoughts of Angledool brought to mind. Shuffles the old streets of Walgett, she remembers that dusty old pub, and the dances she played for till morning out there on the Mulga scrub. To the sound of the concertina, they dance the night away. And by the light of the candle and slush lamp, oh, couldn't that Polly Flood play? And to the sound of a concertina, they dance the night away. And by the light of the candle and slush lamp, oh, couldn't that Polly Flood play? Oh, couldn't that Polly Flood play?
Taking the historian Manning Clark's advice regarding the importance of visiting a place to understand the history, I travelled to Angledool in September 2003. While there, I visited Mrs. Pat Cross. Her husband, George, kindly showed me around the area that was Old Angledool and is now a part of their Mehigh property. Mrs. Cross showed me an undated photocopy of a newspaper article showing Polly Flood cutting a birthday cake. She had just reached the age of 103. Whenever I now sing the song, I try to remember, on reaching the last verse, to sing, "She lived to be over 100. Talking to one of the ladies at the Walgett Historical Society on my return trip from Angledool in 2003, she remembered often seeing Polly Flood carrying a bag which she would drag along the ground. Apparently, she always had a couple of dogs with her as well. While at the Historical Society, I came across another photograph of Polly Flood. It was possibly taken around the same time as the one previously mentioned. In the photograph, she looks dressed to go to the shops, with a walking stick in one hand and what looks like an empty Hessian bag over her shoulder. Again, she is accompanied by a dog. Adapting Jim Harper's poetry into song and using his writing to inspire new compositions continues to be, for me, an enjoyable pursuit. I hope my endeavours also prevent the stories of people like King Tommy and Polly Flood from slipping into what Jim Harper called the limbo of forgotten things. Well, thank you again for listening. From the Blue Mountains in New South Wales, Australia, until the next episode in the series Open Your Eyes to Australia, bye for now.
For you can wander the golden shores for miles. You can climb the highest mountains, touch the skies, or gaze on the far horizon, red outback. Open your eyes to Australia. Open your eyes to Australia. Open your eyes to Australia.